This is Digital Story Podcast number 1001, May 27th, 2025. Today's theme is Half Digital, Half Analog, the Fujifilm X-Half Review. I'm Derek Story. 2025 is establishing itself as the year of the creative camera. We started with the Sigma BF, then the Fujifilm GFX 100 RF, and now the Fujifilm X-Half. Nothing boring in this lot, and whether or not you decide to purchase the new X-Half, you're bound to appreciate the thought that went into it. I'll share my highlights in today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Well, welcome back. We're working on the next 1,000 podcasts starting today. And my voice is back a bit. Sorry about the cold-laden voice last week. You know, of course, right? Of course, 1,000 podcasts, milestone, all this thing. And I get a cold, just destroyed my voice. So thank you for hanging in there with it. I didn't want to mention my voice during the podcast itself because, well, you know, that show will probably live on for a while, and I don't want to be hearing that, well, sorry about the cold message every time someone tunes into that show. But the fact of the matter is, as you well know with the Digital Story, the show will go on, voice or no voice. It's better this week, and it will be even better next week. Okay, let's get to the subject at hand here, which is this Fuji X-Half camera. Now, this is somewhat of a polarizing camera in the sense that I think some people get it, right? They go, man, this is really cool. This is a creative tool. You really stepped outside of the lines on this one and appreciate the risks that Fujifilm has taken with this $849 camera. The other half goes, you know what? It doesn't shoot raw. I'm not interested. Right? Any camera, any digital camera in this time that does not shoot raw will immediately be dismissed by a segment of the photography population. And no judgment there. I get it. I mean, being able to manipulate raw files in post-production, that is part of our workflow, right? That is part of what we do and where we make the magic happen. I think what Fujifilm is arguing, or one of the things I think Fujifilm is arguing, that the magic can happen earlier in the process at capture, if you give it a chance, right? If you use the tools that they've put in the camera, and that if the JPEGs, you know, look the way that you want, why do you need to go to RAW? Why not just use the JPEG and call it a day? And there's a segment of the population that agrees with that. They're going, look, you know, we want to have fun taking pictures. We want the creativity to be upfront, and we don't necessarily want to sit in front of our computer and manipulate files in order to get the shot that we want. We want to take the picture, and then we want to share the picture. And I think that that's what this camera is about. What I said at the top of the show, I still stand by, which is that even if this camera isn't for you, you have to admire what Fujifilm has done here. I mean, this is a tremendous risk, in my opinion, along with the Sigma BF, and, you know, to some degree, even the GFX 100 RF cameras breaking the mold of what we've been seeing for the last few years. And I think in many ways, the X-Half does it to the most extreme degree. Okay, so let's just start with its main features, because this is what we tend to look at when we're deciding, okay, does it even pass the first cut, right? The resolution, 17.74 million pixels. So basically an 18 megapixel camera, which in my view is enough, especially for the type of photography that we're talking about, this creative photography. 18 megapixels is plenty. A lot of us, did a lot of damage in the photography world with 12 megapixels. Micro Four Thirds shooters then got to move up to 16 megapixels. And even now, we're topping out at 20 megapixels. So 18 megapixels is right in that spot that a lot of us has been operating for a long time anyway. It has a 1-inch sensor. And I think this is rather cool because the 1-inch sensor is big enough to give you the image quality that we want, but at the same time, small enough to, you know, be very flexible because you've got a fixed focal length lens on here that works out to be 32 millimeters. 32 millimeters is a pretty cool spot. In fact, that is the focal length that the Fujifilm, was it Quick Snap? Disposable cameras were. So they're kind of thinking, all right, that worked for a long time, still works with the disposable cameras. We're just going to put that on this camera as well. A very flexible focal length, and it's easy to do with the 1-inch sensor. They go together really well, right? They go together really well. Now the LCD monitor, it's 2.4 inch on the back, and it's vertical. I was saying at the top of the podcast that, you know, half digital, half analog, the Fujifilm X-Half. That's not really why it's called the X-Half. It's because it's a half frame configuration. In other words, when you hold the camera the way that we normally hold the camera, it's shooting vertical. And it is based upon the concept of a half frame film camera. Olympus made many of these, where you would take a 35 millimeter roll of film, and it had 36 exposures on it, and you shoot it half frame, so you get 72 exposures, and they're vertically oriented. The vertical orientation is an important part of targeting this camera to the clientele. Because of smartphones, more people are shooting vertically. It just, the whole workflow seems to work. You hold your phone that way, it goes on to social that way, and we're just seeing that orientation a lot more than horizontal. I remember back a few years ago, I had an old fuddy-duddy moment. It was pretty funny, actually. It was out at Joshua Tree, and people always asked me to take their pictures. In fact, we were kidding in the Redwoods just recently that I could have opened a photo stand there because of all the cameras that were handed to me to take pictures of folks. But so this is a common thing, but this one in Joshua Tree really stands out at me because they were younger, you know, they were like in their early 20s, and there's a small group of them and they looked great. It was fantastic. And we were in a good setting with morning light, and they wanted group shot. And so I took their phone, I held it horizontally because that's just where my brain went on a group shot, to hold it horizontally. There's five of them. So I took the shots. I thought they looked pretty good. Handed the phone to the guy that handed it to me, his phone. He's looking at him and goes, oh, these are really nice. Very nice. Could you take some vertical now? And I go, oh man, did I just show my colors, right? Oh, yes, of course. I will take some vertical now. So then we did another series of shots where I held the phone vertically, got the group shots, everything looked good, handed it back to them, and they were pleased. They were like super pleased and thanked me and all that kind of stuff. But that reminded me that that vertical orientation, that's a real line in the sand between generations. Us older folks that have been around for a while, taking pictures for a while, tend to hold the camera horizontally first and then switch to vertical if we need to. Whereas once you get on the other side of that line, they start with the camera vertically and then only switch to horizontal if they need to. The Fujifilm X-Half is designed for the people on the side of the line that start out holding the camera vertically. So it is a very natural orientation for them. Very smart and very in tune. Now, the lead designer on this camera, he's younger. He's younger, and they gave him a lot of latitude, and I think it was a good choice. I really do. So anyway, it's not half digital, half analog, according to Fujifilm. It's half frame orientation. But I like half digital, half analog because I think it works as well. All right, so let's go on from there. That was worth spending a minute on, though, because I think it's a big deal in terms of the whole camera concept. The image size in a single frame, 3,648 by 4,864. So not bad resolution, but they have this two-in-one mode that allows you to put two vertical frames side by side, basically on the same image file, and it'd be on the same print, so you get a diptych. And when you do that, the resolution is 7,296 by 4,864 when you go to two-in-one mode. And it's a very clever design. I think when you're just in regular picture-taking mode, it has a film advance lever on there. That lever has different functions. Like when you're in film mode, which is a specific mode I'll talk about in a moment, then you actually use that lever to advance the frames as you would with a film camera. When you're not in film mode, though, that lever allows you to create the two-in-one. It tells the camera, okay, put the second frame next to the first frame. And I love this idea because I think for storytelling, if you're creative and you're a good storyteller, you can put those two frames side by side and really say a lot with just those two frames. So that's pretty cool. So the resolution is fine. You can make some nice prints. Now, they've designed this thing to work with their Instax printers, four of them, but not all of them. And this was actually one of my disappointments. So the workflow is, if you have an Instax printer, if you have one that is compatible, which is the MiniLink 2, the MiniLink 3, the SquareLink, and the Link Wide, then you have the printer with you, you have the camera, take a picture, let's say you do a 2-in-1, and then you can print it out right there. And I think that whole thing makes sense. Now I have a Mini Evo, which I just love that camera. And it takes pictures, but it's also a printer. And I use it as a printer actually more than a picture taker. I send images from my iPhone to it and print them out on Instax. And it isn't, at least right now, that may change with firmware updates, it isn't compatible with the XHAF. And I wish it would be. And I don't understand why. I mean, I understand that there's some protocols that have to happen, some coding, all that sort of stuff. I think the XHAF should be compatible for output with all the Fujifilm printers and cameras that print. And the Mini Evo is a super logical one. So that one's a little bit of a disappointment. But yes, you can basically print right on the spot. And you have enough resolution where you can take the files home and print them out on your inkjet printer as well. What else do we have here that I need to talk about? USB-C connectivity, yay. Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. All that's going to be important. SD card. Yes, that makes sense. TTL metering, 256 zone, good stuff. The shutter has a nice range from 15 minutes to 1/2000th of a second. And the aperture ring on the camera, which is another nice touch, I really like it, goes from f2.8 to f11. That's pretty cool. It's got the things that we need, and it has an optical viewfinder that, of course, is the vertical orientation. So you're using an optical viewfinder most of the time for your composing, and that allows it to get a whole lot of pictures on one charge, over 800 frames per charge. They have the Fujifilm film simulations, most of them, not all of them, but most of them that we're familiar with, that we like. It's a no-brainer for this camera, right? And then they've added a lot of the filters that those of us that are shot with, like the Mini Evo, are familiar with as well. So there's a lot of things that you can do with the images at capture mode between the filters and the film simulations. And then they've even added some new filters. Let's talk about film camera mode, because this is really, I think, at the core of this camera. The XHAF is for folks that appreciate the way film looks, but they don't want the hassle of shooting film. So this camera gives you the convenience of digital with the output, essentially, of an analog camera. And they really take this to another level with film camera load. I'm going to read you what I said about it in my review of this camera. If you really want to embrace the analog camera experience, the X-Half can accommodate you probably better than any other device I've tested. Film camera mode lets you digitize the experience of using a classic one-time use film camera. After selecting a film simulation to use and a roll size of 36, 54, or 72 exposures, you can emulate an analog-like experience complete with the need to wind the camera's frame advance lever after making each image, replicating the classic analog photography experience. The LCD won't display captured images or let you compose on it while in film camera mode. You must use the optical viewfinder. Once you've completed a roll of film, you can process it via the X-Half smartphone app. Another nice touch to further enhance this experience is the film roll window on the back panel of the camera that displays an electronic image of the film cartridge that you're using, such as Astia or Provia. I always liked that feature on my analog cameras, and it's fun that Fujifilm includes it on the X-Half as well. Now, I saw a demo back when we were being briefed on this camera. They actually did a demo for us of sending the roll of film to the smartphone, the app on the smartphone, and then watching it develop. And it was really cool. What you saw are your frames there, like a contact sheet. Then you see them as negatives if you shot one of the film simulation negative films. And then as it processes them, the thumbnails on the contact sheet change from negatives to positives as they're being developed according to the specifications that you used at capture. So you're literally watching your roll of film developed there on your smartphone. It was neat. I mean, I have to say it was pretty cool. Now the LCD on the back, you can't use it for chimping or previewing or anything while you're in film camera mode. So it is just information only. Just like if you were shooting film, right? You don't know how well you captured that frame, right? You took your best shot and then you hope for the best when it comes back from the lab. And that's the way it works. So again, they're taking this concept of a film camera in the digital age to a pretty extreme point, but it's pretty fun. And if you really want to embrace the experience, film camera mode lets you dive in, you know, all the way to the deep end of the pool. One of the things that you'll notice when you look at the camera, there aren't very many buttons and controls. There's a exposure comp dial on top, but there's just not a whole lot. You have an aperture ring. And the reason why is because they're going to make you use the LCD for setting many of the controls. This is something, again, this could be a generational thing, because for me, I'm going, I don't know. I don't use the swipe controls very much on the cameras that I have right now. I really like to program function buttons and things like that. So that's my preference. This camera, you're not going to have a choice. You're going to have to swipe to go from aperture priority to program mode and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how long it would take me to warm up to this. I'm guessing that if I just said, hey, I'm just taking this camera and this is what I'm going to live by for a few days, I would probably warm up to it fairly quickly. But it is something to be aware of. You don't have a lot of physical controls with this camera. In part, that's also what makes it so pretty to look at. It's just beautiful because you're going to use the LCD on the back and you're going to be swiping up, down, and all around to make your settings. So it's just something to be aware of with this little guy. Let's just get to some pros and cons on this now that I've framed it for you, right? I think for the target market, and I do couch it that way on purpose, because whenever I try to judge anything, I try to judge it in the context of what it was intended for, right? And in this case, it's intended for people who like analog look but don't want the hassle of digital. So for this market, here are what I consider the positives. Very compact. I mean, it only weighs 0.5 pound, roughly. You can just put it in your pocket and go take pictures. Good imaging pipeline for a compact camera. It's got a nice Fujinon lens, and it's got a 1-inch sensor. A cornucopia of creative tools for analog-loving photographers. just enough video capability for content creators. It's got full HD at 24p. Superb battery life. They say up to 880 shots, I believe them. The LED flash, it doesn't have a regular strobe flash built in. It has an LED flash, but it doubles as a movie light. Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, USB-C, so the connectivity is good. It has a threaded socket, not for a cable release, but for a soft touch. Second time I've been faked out by this. What was the other camera that faked me out on that? My Nikon ZF faked me out with that too. So it has a threaded socket at the shutter button, but it's for soft touch, not for cable release. I'm going to put that in the con for me, okay? Good optical viewfinder. The integrated film advance is fun. And then they have three attractive design options. And I like the middle option. The black is a little too dark. The silver is a little too bright. But that middle one, that kind of that charcoal color with black trim looks really good to me. However, if you're outside of the target market, these cons will probably deter you from purchasing the XF. No RAW, right? JPEG only on this. There's missing film simulations for those of us that shoot with Fuji. There isn't ProNeg standard. There isn't ProNeg high. There isn't the bleach bypass. No monochrome. They have Acros, but not the monochrome. And they don't have the monochrome yellow, red, green. So there are some film simulations that aren't there. That hot shoe on the top plate, that's not a hot shoe. It's a cold shoe. So there's no contacts for an external flash, not even a cute little petite one, which would look great on there. I think that's a real disappointment. They make you depend on that LED. They didn't have to give us TTL, but just hot shoe. So we could use some cool, I got all these cool old flashes that are really neat. Anyway, that's a disappointment. The fixed back LCD with a lowish resolution, 0.92 million dots. Does not connect to all Fujifilm Instax printer, I mentioned that earlier. And it relies heavily on swipe controls for basic camera settings. The Fujifilm X-Half Compact Camera will be available in June, I think about mid-June, at a manufacturer's suggested retail price of $849 US, $998 Canadian. So it's an investment. It's a real investment. You have to want this camera and decide that you're going to shoot with it a fair amount. So here's the bottom line. Photographers and content creators have been asking for more creative camera designs. Fujifilm listened. The X-Half is a risky, fun, innovative tool for those who love film photography. At $849, however, it has to be more than a toy. Now, thanks to its quality lens, optical viewfinder, and 1-inch sensor, the X-Half is capable of delivering outstanding pictures. And I have seen a number of pictures zoomed in, even though they're JPEGs, zoomed in, and the quality is there. Personally, I'm not in the target market. I'm more of an X100 guy, but I am attracted to the X-Half's handsome looks and creative options, and with a few firmware updates, I could find myself leaning back its way. Okay, I have a couple camera news items I want to cover. This first one means a lot to me. Iconic photographer Sebastio Salgado has died. And this is an article that is in Petapixel. I originally read the article in New York Times. And if you get the New York Times digital edition, there's a very good write-up there about it, more extensive than this one. But for the podcast, this one on Petapixel is a little bit better. It's a little bit shorter. This photographer, Mr. Salgado, is my favorite photographer of my lifetime. I just think he is and was amazing. Let me read you a little bit about this. Legendary Brazilian social documentary photographer Sebastio Salgado has died at the age of 81. Salgado, known for his powerful black and white imaging, incorporating themes of poverty, war, displacement, and the environment, announced his retirement in February 2024 after years of working in hostile environments. Quote, I know I won't live much longer, but I don't want to live much longer. I've lived so much and seen so many things, Salgado said in an interview last year. Salgado suffered from a blood disorder that was a result of malaria that he caught while in Indonesia. He also had a spinal issue from when a landmine blew up a vehicle he was riding in during Mozambique's War of Independence in 1974. Born in Brazil, Salgado trained as an economist before turning to photography, a shift that led him to chronicle the global consequences of labor, migration, and environmental devastation. Salgado's major project, including workers, migrations, and genocides, took him to over 120 countries, often photographing in extreme conditions. His signature high contrast style and deep empathy earned him international acclaim and numerous awards. He received the Outstanding Contribution to Photography Award from the Sony World Photography Awards in 2024. He co-founded Amazon's Images and, with his wife, reforested over 1,500 acres of degraded land in Brazil, creating the Instituto Terra, a testament to their shared vision of renewal. Petapixel interviewed Salgado in 2022 about his project Amazonia, which was 9 years in the making. The reason why he's my favorite contemporary photographer is because he combined great artistry. His black and white work is phenomenal. Just absolutely beautiful. And the composition, I marvel at his compositions. His ability to tell a story in one frame. Just amazing. And then the things that he photographed, the people that he photographed, really caring about major issues of our time. Combining that to me was just so very powerful. Every time I look at a collection of his images, I just go, if only I could be that impactful, if only I could be that artistic. He just had it all. He worked hard. He worked all the way up until 2024. So it was definitely, a labor of love. I will miss not seeing new images from him. But fortunately, he leaves behind a collection of portfolios, of stories, of books that I just think are profoundly impactful. And I'm just so thankful that we had him here to inspire us and inform us. Rest in peace, Mr. Salgado. You will be missed. Ricoh is finally making a GR4 camera, and it's coming this fall. The hits just keep coming in 2025. I'm so excited about this, and I bet you a lot of Ricoh GR shooters are as well. Let me read you a little bit about what The Verge says. I have a link to the complete story in the show notes. In a pretty bare-bones press release accompanied by a couple of pictures and detailed specs, Ricoh Surprise announced that its long-awaited GR4 camera will launch this fall. The GR4 will adhere closely to the design of the GR3 from 2018 and will continue to use an autofocusing 28mm equivalent f2.8 lens and only a rear LCD for composing photos and videos with no electronic or optical viewfinder available. What's known for certain, based on the spec list, is that the GR4 retains the built-in ND filter of the GR3, but it slightly ups the resolution of its large APS-C sensor from 24 megapixels to 26. It will also have a higher ISO range that reaches over 204,000 at its maximum setting, and 5-axis stabilization instead of 3-axis. The GR4 lens may be the same focal length and maximum aperture as previous generations, but it's a new 7-element design and a new arrangement utilizing an additional aspherical element that should yield better corrections. The upcoming camera will also have face and eye detection for its autofocus tracking and 53 gigabytes of usable built-in storage. onboard storage is great, and it's much more than the GR3's 2 GB, but the GR4 is also downsizing from full-size SD cards to micro SD. While there isn't a price yet, Ricoh has confirmed that the GR4 is expected to release in the autumn of 2025. As cool and fun as I thought the just-announced Fujifilm X-Half might be, the GR4 has instantly become my most anticipated camera of 2025. All right, so Ricoh GR fans, you have something to look forward to. I'm sure there's going to be more revealed on this. Ricoh is giving us a lot of information, but you don't know for sure until we see final specs. You won't have to wait too long, a little bit later this year. Before I stick care of a little Virtual Camera Club news, I just want to thank everyone who signed up for Inner Circle Bold. We have a lively crew now on the Inner Circle Bold boat, and I'm tickled pink. Of course, they will be gathering together for the photos class that we're going to do, the photos online class that will be coming up here very soon. Before we do that, though, we have the Creative Camera Techniques online course that begins in just a couple weeks. And if you haven't signed up for that and you're still interested in it, I think we have one or two spots open. And the Creative Camera Techniques is going to be a blast. I've been working on that for a bit now on that class. And it was crazy. I just started thinking about and researching all the cool things that you could do in camera, and then just started kind of bundling them in little groups so that each class you'll have like two or three different techniques to choose from. We'll talk about all three of them. And then for your class assignment for that week, you get to pick the one that appeals to you most and you'll do that. I just think we're going to have so much fun, and then we're going to share the pictures on the online space that we have on Derek's Story Online. At any rate, if you're interested in that workshop, we still have a couple seats open, and it starts June 5th, right around the corner, and you can find out information on it on the Nimble Photographer Workshops. Just click on Workshops at the Digital Story Nimble Photographer, wherever you happen to light, and you can sign up right there. I've also been working on the Sonoma County Autumn Adventure Workshop, and this has been fun because I've been doing this workshop for a while now, and I have so many great locations and activities. You know, it's not easy to choose which ones I want to do when I do it from year to year. This is our longest running workshop that we've done in Digital Story. So what I did was I put together the list of candidates, and I'm running those by the folks that have signed up for the workshop. Workshop participants are going to help shape this workshop, which I think is really cool, so that I can design this workshop, whether we're shooting fall color or African wildlife or viticulture or wine experience, whatever it happens to be. There's so many things on the list, redwoods, rugged coast, it goes on and on. So that I can shape this workshop for the participants. So I'm really excited about that. We still have a couple seats open for that as well. And it's on our workshops page. And that begins on November 4th. More information is available there. And of course, you can always write me and ask your questions. And finally, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. I heard from Drew the other day, and he wants to do a YouTube video, the two of us, talking about printing. So I'll keep you posted. We're still in the discussion phase of that, but I told him that I'd do it. I mean, I basically would do anything that he asked me to do. They're such great partners for the Digital Story. And they also have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story where you can learn everything that you need to learn about how to get artistic images out of your inkjet printer. Plus, they have all the paper to make it happen. A photograph changes when you put it on artistic paper. A photograph can be many different types of images depending on the stock that you put it on. Red River Paper helps bring out the art in your images Click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story to learn more. And a big thanks for sponsoring this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.